Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluami, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Arabami, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the New Power Radio Network. And, of course, our sponsors, Manhood, Race, and Culture, and the People's Platform for Equality and Justice. We were started back in 2013 after the unjust settlement verdict, and we appreciate your sponsorship and your support of everything that we have had going on for the past 10-plus years, 30-plus years, if you count the entire time that I myself have been boots on the ground here in Cincinnati, Ohio. Just to give everyone an update on where we are as Sign of the Times, as New Power Radio Network, the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, the National Freedom and Justice Movement, Kabuka Publishing, Inc., Bars Beyond Bars Magazine, and I'm probably forgetting a few things, but that's okay. If you go to my Facebook page, as Queen Tahira, New Power Radio Network, Sign of the Times, People's Platform, all of our pages are interconnected with one another. And I just wanted to, like, just take a minute to just talk about where the Cincinnati community is as far as my opinion as the director of these organizations, respectively, as a person who has been boots on the ground and involved, have never left the trenches over the past 30 years, no matter, you know, what kind of jobs I was offered, no matter what kind of positions or supposedly positions even of prestige to work with certain large companies here in Cincinnati. And in, you know, you don't have to be a genius to figure out pretty much, you know, the top five largest companies here. At some point or time, I could have engaged or have actually engaged. And that just, that arena, that environment just was not meant for me. So I continue to stay in the trenches and have paid the cost for staying in the trenches, both personally and professionally, to the point where those that are in the petty bourgeoisie positions, so-called black leadership positions, even as much as those that have national affiliations to other national affiliations that are supposed to represent the black, the best interests of the black community, melanated community, ADOS, however you want to categorize us, they're supposed to be engaged in that way, in the way that we have been as the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, without a dime from these government agencies, no PPP money, no ARP money. We can't even get the city of Cincinnati to properly answer our request for Freedom of Information Act, information that we have requested on several occasions. But because there is so much disrespect here politically, for the people as a whole, they continue to act as though they can do the petty fake smiles, and that's supposed to be sufficient enough to, I guess, smooth over or put a Band-Aid on the injuries that have been caused to people like myself and others in the city, as far as, you know, taking people's property, unfair taxing, targeting our communities as far as gentrification, using the police department in order to further those gentrification agendas. It's been a comprehensive plan since the collaborative agreement was established and has gotten progressively worse since then because no one was adhering to this collaborative agreement, that was supposed to be based on representing the best interests of the people and making sure that the injustices that have been able to happen here won't continue to happen. But it's been a moot point because they basically give a dog and pony show anytime someone questions whether the collaborative agreement is working, and wait until people go back to sleep. But we're not going to sleep. If we are truly about no justice, no peace, this is what no justice, no peace looks like. It means that you don't leave the trenches. You don't leave the people behind. You don't create these fake, superficial agendas and platforms and act as though the people that have been here, who have seen what has happened, what has not happened, what was committed to happen that didn't happen, and so on and so forth. For decades, for over 30 years, I've borne witness to this thing happening here in Cincinnati. So it's just time for it to stop. I mean, it's time for those people that say that they represent our best interests to either, you know what, or get off the pot. And this is my broadcast. I don't answer to anybody except the people that support us. as to what we say on the air, so I don't have to worry about anybody being offended more than we are offended by the fact that this stuff is still going on. I'm trying not to cuss, y'all. I'm really not. I'm trying not to cuss, but yeah, I mean, this kind of thing has been going on as long as I've been involved here in Cincinnati, and it's just time for it to stop. The only way it's going to stop is for us to stop it, and I've said that going all the way back to the speech in front of the prosecutor's office after the execution murder of Brother Sam DeVoe. So we're going to hang out for a bit, see if folks show up, see if anybody tunes in to turn on. If not, we're just going to hang out and keep chatting and check out a little bit of music in between me and my soapbox rant about the dysfunctional environment that exists here in the city of Cincinnati, especially when it comes to melanated people. It's time for it to stop. It's time for the Declaration of Freedom to be demanded, no matter where we are, whether we are on the inside, behind the bars, being the voices from behind enemy lines, or whether we're so-called free on the outside, still dealing with the same things politically that we've always been forced to deal with. But the difference is in Cincinnati that we're supposed to have a black organization and black people that are supposed to be in positions of trust who are allowing this collaborative agreement to be pimped once again. So hang out with me. You're listening to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio. If you'd like to call in, the number is 515-605-9859, 515-605-9859. And don't forget to press the number 1 if you'd like to come into queue. Hang out with me and check out a little bit of the Honorable Warrior Ancestor, Khalid Muhammad. We'll be right back.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution. Because revolution is nothing but change. And all niggas do is change. Niggas come in for murk and change into pimping clothes. They hit the streets to make some quick change. Niggas change their hair from black to red to blonde. And old black hair and lips will change. Niggas kill other niggas just because one didn't receive the correct change. Niggas change from men to women, from women to men. Niggas change, change, change. You hear niggas say, things are changing, things are changing. Yeah, things are changing. Nigga things into black nigga things. Black nigga things that go through all kinds of changes. The change in the day that makes you mad and rave. Black power, and the change that comes over them at night as they sigh and moan. Light side, light side. Niggas always going through bullshit change. But when it comes for real change, niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are actors. Niggas are actors. Niggas act like they're in a hurry to catch the first act of the great white hope. Niggas try to act like Malcolm. And when a white man doesn't react toward them like he did Malcolm, niggas want to act violently. Niggas act so cool and slick, causing white people to say, what makes you niggas act like that? Niggas act like you ain't never seen nobody act before. But when it comes to acting out revolution, niggas say, I can't dig in action. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about getting high and riding around in L. Niggas to get high and ride to hell. Niggas talk about pimping, pimping that, pimping what? Pimping yours, pimping mine. Just to be pimping is a hell of a line. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about your mind. Talk about my mind stronger than yours. I got that bitch's mind uptight. Niggas don't know a damn thing about the mind, but they'd be right. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas fuck. Niggas fuck, fuck, fuck. Niggas love the word fuck. They think they're so fucking cute. They fuck you around. The first thing they say when they're mad is fuck it. You play a little too much with them, they say fuck you. When it's time to TTP, niggas are somewhere fucking. Try to be nice to them, they fuck over you. Niggas don't realize why they're doing all this fucking. They're getting fucked around. But when they do realize, it's too late. So niggas just get fucked up. Niggas talk about fucking, fucking that, fucking this, fucking yours, fucking my sis, not knowing what they're fucking for. Ain't fucking for love and appreciation, just fucking to be fucking. Niggas fuck white thighs, black thighs, yellow thighs, brown thighs. Niggas fuck ankles when they went out of thighs. Niggas fuck Charlie, Linda, and Sue. And if you don't mind out, niggas will fuck you. Niggas would fuck, fuck if it could be fuck. But when it comes to fucking for revolutionary causes, niggas say, fuck revolution. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are players. Niggas are players, are players. Niggas play football, baseball, and basketball while the white man is cutting off their balls. When the niggas play ain't tight enough to play with some black guys, niggas play with white guys to see if they still have some play left. And when ain't no white guys to play with, niggas play with themselves. Niggas tell you they're ready to be liberated, but when you say, let's go take our liberation, niggas reply, I was just playing. Niggas are playing with revolution and losing. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas shoot off at the mouth. Niggas shoot blue. Niggas shoot traps. Niggas cut around the corners and shoot down the streets. Niggas shoot sharp branches at white women. Niggas shoot dope until they aren't. Niggas shoot guns and rifles on New Year's Eve. A new year that is coming in. The white police would do more shooting at them. Where are niggas when the revolution needs some shots? Yeah, you know, niggas are somewhere shooting this shit. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are lovers. Niggas are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to see Clark Gable make love to Marilyn Monroe. Niggas love to see Taj and fuck over the native. Niggas love to hear an old ranger yell, high on silver. Niggas love commercials. Niggas love commercials. Oh, how niggas love commercials. You can take niggas out of the country, but you can't take the country out of niggas. Niggas are lovers, are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to hear Malcolm rap, but they didn't love Malcolm. Niggas love everything but themselves. But I'm a lover too. Yep, I'm a lover too. I love niggas, I love niggas, I love niggas. Because niggas are me, and I should only love that which is me. I love to see niggas go through changes, love to see niggas act, love to see niggas make them plays and shoot this shit. But there's one thing about niggas I do not love. Niggas are scared of revolution.
The poem is by Taimbe Jess, and the poem is, when niggas love revolution like they love the bull. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, youth will wear red, black, and green patches over the emblems on their starter jackets. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, brothers will gather regularly at barbershops and corner stops to discuss George Jackson and the Handbook of Revolutionary Warfare and People's War before they go home to take care of their children each night. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, playground basketball courts will become paramilitary training grounds where we learn to shoot guns at the enemy and not baskets for bets. When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, we will spend hours and hours watching our children grow into soldiers and not basketball players. When niggas love revolution like they love the bulls, we will know CIA stats, FBI stats, infant mortality stats, police brutality stats, political prisoners and prisoners of war, and literacy training techniques like we know Paxson's shoe size, or Shaq's shoe size, or the way we know Rodman or Pippen's rebounds, or Grant's salary, and all the intimate details of Michael's last gambling spree. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, you will be able to ask any youth on the street, who is Sundiata Okoye? Who is Asada Shakur? Who is Sekou Ojima? Who is Rochelle McGee and Jonathan Jackson? You will be able to ask, who is Matula Shakur? Who is Queen Mother Moore? They will be able to tell you without skipping a beat. Niggas love revolution like they love the bull. You will go on to ask them about Michael Jordan, and they will say, who? When niggas love revolution like they love the bull, masses of us will go down to tear up Carolina coroner and his office to find out what really happened to James Jordan instead of waiting on the word of newspapers and sheriff's offices. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, we will show up in Washington, D.C. with the Million Man March, with our God and with our guns. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, they will start to seriously wonder why one Negro putting a brown ball through a white net makes more mint money in one season than they will make in an entire lifetime, and do something about it. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, you will see Phil Jackson running up and down an empty court minutes before game time screaming, "Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas? Where are my niggas?" as the niggas leave the stadium to go build liberation schools in their community. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, all niggas will refuse to shoot ball with the president, with or without their dashikis on. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, we'll become associated with the sound that CIA agents, snitches, rats, and agent provocateurs who join our organizations and work against the legitimate aspirations of our people who yearn to breathe free, drug dealers and others will make when they are thrown gracefully face first into open manholes. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, Nike will no longer be able to sell $160 basketball shoes in the black community, because we would rather spend the money on liberation and revolution, thank you. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, they will love it, they will love it more than chitlins, more than all my children, more than Jerry Carroll, more than permanent, more than Cadillacs and Mercedes-Benz and Rolls-Royces and BMW's cars. When niggas love revolution like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their family like they love the Bulls, when niggas love their children like they love the Bulls, when niggas love to be free like they love the Bulls, when niggas love struggle like they love the Bulls, when niggas love dignity like they love the Bulls, when niggas love niggas like they love the Bulls, we will become black people and all the bullshit will hit the fan. You gonna march, nigga? You gonna picket, nigga? You gonna put out some flyers on me, right, nigga? You gonna put up posters on me, right, nigga? You gonna throw temper tantrums in the street? You demand that I free him. The white man does not respect such a demand. He only respects power. He only respects an eye for an eye, and a tooth for a tooth, and a limb for a limb, and a life for a life. That's all he respects. He has already calculated that we will be outraged. He has already calculated that we will be enraged. He has already calculated that we will march, we will picket, we will cry, we will throw temper tantrums on the radio and on the television, and we will have rallies all over the place. But he has not contemplated that we will kill his ass if he murders Mumia Abu Jamal. The Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad said, no man or no woman should speak ahead of their actual power to do. If you don't have the power to do, then you shouldn't have the mouth to say. You've got the power, black man. You've got the power, black woman. You've got the power, young black man and woman. If you can drive by and shoot your brother or your sister sitting on the porch, if you can drive by and kill their grandma and their grandpa and their uncle and their aunt and shoot the baby in the crib, then how come you can't shoot this goddamn cracker and free our political prisoner?
their significance at the police station. Brother Hamadou Diallo shot 41 times by four beasts, by four devils, by four crackers. 41 times. Unarmed. Never been in any trouble with anybody. That's on the East Coast. On the West Coast, Sister Tisha Miller, 19 years old, shot 24 times by four white policemen. What is God and the ancestors telling us? Rodney King, beat within an inch of his life on camera by four white policemen, and the four white policemen were acquitted by the state of California. Do you expect the white man to do something about the murder of Brother Hamadou Diallo? And these Negro preachers, these boot-licking, butt-licking, butt-dancing, bamboozled, half-baked, half-fried, sissified, punkified, pasteurized, homogenized niggers going down to be arrested every day. You don't impress anybody, nigger, getting arrested by appointment. I would like to make an appointment. And the nigger preachers, honey, I'll be in time for supper. Tomorrow evening, you don't have to wait. I'm going to go down and make my, I'm going to make my appointment to be arrested. I'll be in by 12, and I'll be out by 2, and I'll be able to do whatever I got to do. You are arrested by appointment and think you messing with the Pepperwood. He'll lock your black raggedy behind up. He's got enough jail for every nigga that wants some jail. But the question is, does he have enough lives for every nigga that wants to kill a cracker? That's the question. It's an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, a limb for a limb, and a life for a life. If caskets are rolling in the white community when they roll in the black community, this would stop. If they're rolling in the white community when they roll in the black community, if they're rolling in the white community as they roll in the black community, this would stop. Somebody has to say this. Everybody wants to do the easy thing. We're going to vote. We're registering to vote. God damn it, don't miss a word. Write it all down, those of you who came to get it, and take it back, wherever you taking it back. Ain't no Democratic Party going to save you. No Republican Party going to save you. No Independent Party going to save you. And ain't no damn third force going to save you. We going to vote. You can't vote your way to freedom, fool. Getting behind some damn glorified shower curtain, pulling a lever, voting for somebody. Nobody has ever voted their way to real freedom. Well, South Africa, shut up, fool. South Africa is still not free. Nelson Mandela is the white man's nigga. The hell you think he became the president? And the hell you think he became the president? You don't spend almost 2 decades in the penitentiary and come out and become president. Ain't that much damn democracy nowhere in the world. Huh? Only these bootlicking niggas can do that. Mary and Barry can smoke crack. Be seen all over the damn world on crack. And get out and become city councilman and then mayor again, a damn crackhead. Running a city. But he's no threat to the white man. You're no threat when you go over and over and over again on the same dead end, unproductive things that we've done in the 60s. You're going to vote. You're going to picket. You're going to boycott. Somebody has to speak to you strongly today because you're falling back into that old integration. Gimme, lemme, have. Can you spare? I'm going to picket. I'm going to pray. I'm going to do everything in every way to get with you, white man. Now I'm going to include you in my religious meeting. When I have big rallies, everybody can come. You know damn well who I'm talking to. And you know what I'm talking about. The white man is all right now. Oh, damn it, he ate the devil on Monday and he ate the devil on Tuesday. Mumia can never be free. God damn it, until you're free. If your brain is not free, Mumia can't be free. If your heart is not free, Mumia can't be free. If you are not free from the chains and the shackles of the white man, Mumia could never be free. None of the political prisoners can ever be free because we will not have the power to free them. We will have exercises in futility. Wasted effort after wasted effort. Have you decided what you will do if they kill him? Have you been discussing it among yourselves? He's discussing from every possible angle that he can imagine what he will do if he has to kill him. Have you decided what you will do? I can't be the one to tell you what to do. But hell, if you don't know what to do, I'll tell you. The lessons say, kill no one. Kill no one whom Allah has not ordered. Huh? We kill only those who God has ordered. Well, God wants the devil dead. I can't give that kind of order. But what does it mean? The most honorable Elijah Muhammad says that justice, the definition for justice, is the reward for good and the punishment for evil. And so Master Farad Muhammad came to turn one world out of power and to bring another world in power. He didn't come to integrate the slave with the slave master. He didn't come to open up the holy temples of Islam to the devil so that you weak-hearted brothers could be scoping white women and crackers with blonde hair coming in the goddamn door trying to get you a white wife. No, Master Farad Muhammad didn't come for that. It's easy to tell the people what you want to tell the people when you know the people don't know. Justice is a reward for good and the punishment for evil. You heard the minister Ismail. He self-talked about a great and a dreadful day. Great for the righteous, dreadful for the unrighteous, great for the black, and dreadful for the white. Justice. Jonathan Jackson went to court for justice at Marin County. When they went to break Sister Asada Shakur out, they went for justice. That's justice. Justice is not always pleading. Negroes in New York around the Diallo case begging and pleading. We want justice. Give us justice. We're not going to take it. We're not going to stand for this. We want the FBI to come in and investigate. Damn fool, the FBI is the problem. We want the government to look into this matter. You're a fool. You're going to... Frank James does something to you, and you're going to call on his big brother, Jesse James. come and put Frank James in check. Jesse, James, we need you to come and give us justice. Frank took something from us. When Jesse gets there, he wants to see what you got left. So he can take whatever his brother Frank didn't already take. You can't take the criminal to the criminal. Yes, exhaust everything you are doing, but at the same time, what is your plan B? If you are revolutionary, what is your revolutionary plan? Huh? You got to have a plan B. You got to have a backup plan. Just in case plan A don't work. Normally when the devil tells you he's going to do something, he doesn't. Then when he tell you he ain't going to do it, what do you expect then?
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on report from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Of parasitic attacks on the black community and its task force. found in documents were written from a perspective of a supremacy of class and ethnicity. What resulted from these egregious errors were the ill-motivated, ill-enforced amendments that were incapable of rectifying the travesty of those documented policies. What we found was not a melting pot, but rather a whistling kettle, sounding the alarm as it was boiling over with consternation among the people, forcing the hand of men who would see to their God-given rights. The root of the problem was far deeper than an inability of inter-ethnic relations. The source derived from political exploits and legal ramifications that proved to be frail and fraudulent. The same would inevitably keep the nation in a continual chaotic state of some sorts. And how frightening it is to know that even in our present time, political, legal, and economic exploitation maintains common place in the dark havens of our democracy. It is an angry rectification as a sacrificial iron will of Reverend Nathaniel Turner, pounding the pavement with troops swollen with prophetic indignation against all odds. It is the packed sales in the rest of 60s, making headlines on TV to voice prophetic grievances, not to tickle ears and appease revolutionary statesmanship, as found embodied in General Toussaint Louverture, on the shores of Haiti, setting political holes and ideological strongholds on who's capable, who is a conqueror, or more succinctly, who is also a man. We are called to continue in his legacy, unashamed to denounce political figures by name. Are we afraid and ashamed to lose tax exemptions if we truly preach in his name in America? And who is speaking prophetic truth to power and making our world a morally better place? These are my thoughts, not just for my tomorrow, but for our tomorrow. Future in our hands, ours for the taking, shaping, and making.
Everybody, if you want to reach out to Sign of the Times Blog Talk Radio, you can do so a few ways. Of course, on Facebook as the People's Platform for Equality and Justice, New Power Radio Network. Myself is Queen Tahira, and of course, Sign of the Times. Also, reach out to us via email, signothetimes19@gmail.com. Signothetimes19@gmail.com. Is also a way you can make a PayPal contribution. And, of course, you can make a contribution as well as on Cash App at $QueenTahira, all one word, no dashes, no spaces, no nothing. And Tahira is spelled T-A-H-I-Y-R-A-H. We will see you all on the air again soon here. And we're going to just go ahead and close out with some more revolutionary dialogue. So let's go to A-Trap Brown, Violence is as American as Apple Pie. This is Queen Tahira signing off. If you want to reach me, 513-913-2691. Thank you as always for your support. We love you. We thank you. We respect you. And most of all, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Salute.
Consider ourselves as the authors of new justice. We have to see ourselves as the authors of a new justice. And wherever we find injustice and tyranny, we must stamp it. We must kill it. Frederick Douglass said, the world belongs to the youth. Our job is to seize that and to make the world more humane. That has to be the role of any revolutionary or any person who considers himself revolutionary.
What really transformed you into the person who grabbed national headlines and with some of the clips that we heard that we ran at the beginning of the program? What moved you to that position?
We're always products of our time, and as to the coming together of certain events and ability more than anything else, I guess would contribute to any person being recognized.
I say violence is necessary. Violence is a part of America's culture. It is as American as cherry pie. Americans taught the black people to be violent. We will use that violence to rid ourselves of oppression if necessary. We will be free by any means necessary.
There has been no successful example of democracy as it's taught in this country. I'm not even talking about as it's practiced. I'm talking about as it's taught in this country.
How about the Constitution?
Looks good on paper. I think, you know, the Constitution has a lot of valid ideas and thoughts. But you see that the contradictions that exist in this country are created out of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. I mean, otherwise, you know, like, you know, Constitution is nothing but white people's paper.
When black people begin to rebel, and you'd call it riots, we understand that those are not riots, those are rebellions. People are rebelling because of conditions and not because of individuals. No individual creates a rebellion. It's created out of the conditions.
Tell them to shoot at Lady Bird.
I say if they give me a gun and tell me to shoot my enemy, I might shoot you.
400 years she taught you white nationalism and you lapped it up. You taught it to your children. You had your children thinking that cows don't give good milk. Black hens don't lay eggs. Black for funerals, white for weddings. That's white nationalism. Santa Claus. A white honky who slides down a black chimney and comes out white.
No, justice ain't blind. Justice see white folks mighty well. As a matter of fact, justice means just us white folks in this country. For black people, justice is a joke. No such thing as justice in this country for black people. The courts are a tool of oppression. The courts, you know, like, help to execute the genocide, the type of genocide that has been practiced against black people in this country for 400 years.
I walked out of the cell, two big animal-like, blue-eyed, pale devils come up and grab me on the arm
right.
Tell me I'm under arrest. However, I know more of their law than they do.
I knew
I was in a federal building. I don't know the honk. You see one, you see them all.
Get off me, man. Just try to pop off of me.
Wait a minute. Let me go, bro. Let me go, bro.
This is not a problem.
Okay, I'm under arrest.
Did you ever get any pressure to stop this foolishness and going back to school and quote-unquote make something of yourself?
From whom now?
For anybody.
Well, yeah, there was always the constant pressure of the older people, of you know, parent and older people who felt that this was not necessarily the way to deal with the problems that were at hand. But again, the level of commitment that most of the people, the youngsters, had at that time was such that they were willing to sacrifice. Again, we began to see the educational process as being no more than a training process to keep people enslaved. And ultimately, we began to view the political process in that manner as well.
As we're talking about Democratic and Republican Party, that's not the case. See, politics concerns everything that you do. Everything that happens in your life is political. The real question is, whose political end does it serve? If it does not serve your political end, then it is not beneficial for you to be political in that fashion.
So where do black people fit into the political spectrum right now? Or should they at all?
Well, politics is defined by the geographical and influential spheres of this country. It's irrelevant to black people, and it's irrelevant to the masses of people. The vote has been used as a tool of oppression against black people. I mean, Camus raises a very good point when he says, what better way to enslave a man than give him the vote and call him free? It does not profit black people or poor people anything
to have the vote and not be able to select the candidates who they want to choose. Now, how can you choose between Lyndon Johnson, Nixon, Agnew, Wallace, and Humphrey? There is no choice. Evil is evil. There's nothing in between it.
We tend to equate progress with concessions. We can no longer make that mistake. You see, when they gave us that nigger astronaut, you say we were making progress, but I told you they were going to lose him in space. He didn't get that far. You put Adam Clayton Powell in office and you couldn't keep him. What you think they're going to do with Thurgood Marshall when they get tired of him? They gave you Walter Washington of Washington, D.C., and you said we were making progress. That's not progress. See, it's no in-between. You're either free or you're a slave. There's no such thing as second-class citizenship. That's like telling me you can be a little bit pregnant.
Again, when you begin to understand the whole system of education in this country, whatever you don't control can be used as a weapon against you. Anything that you don't control can be used as a weapon against you. Education has been used as a weapon against black people because black people have been trained to think a certain way. See, we do not control politics, so politics as it's known in this country is a weapon against black people. And we begin to examine what politics is, we find out it's no more than the apex of white cultural aggression. Nothing more. When a man tells you that you can only become free through voting, then he is restricting your mobility. He's restricting your freedom. You were born free. You must exercise your rights to be free. That man cannot give you freedom. But when he restricts an individual and tells him that he can only become free by voting, then he has denied you your freedoms.
Senator Gregory, running for office, Eldridge Cleaver. I think the vote can only be used as a tool of organization. We can only use the vote to organize our people. Now, to really believe that we can put someone in office and that these people would be responsive to our needs, it's naive, politically naive. Because even if one of the black candidates who ran for office were to take the office of president, then black people must be prepared to fight against that person.
Why?
Because, you see, the system mandates the action of the individual. The individual does not determine how this country will function. This country works off the military-industrial complex, which means that it's profitable to wage war. And unless you, you know, devise another plan, another scheme to sustain, to boost this economy, then it's going to be necessary to wage war, whether, you know, a black individual is in office or a white individual is in office. Well, we're talking about a complete a change in system.
When oppressed people began to evaluate politics, we must understand that we have to create a politics that's relevant to us. We must create a politics that's relevant to our lifestyle. We must create a politics that's relevant to what we do every day. So when we talk about politics, when we talk about the political reality of the black community, we are talking about something that's beyond Democratic and Republican Party. And in that sense, we must understand that we must incorporate revolutionary ideology that pushes this type of political know-how and political knowledge in the black community.
If you were well reared to be, you know, seen and not heard, respectful and all of that, where did this spine come from? And what was the reaction on the part of your parents when they saw your shoulders beginning to square and your spine beginning to straighten?
Again, the Creator has placed within every person a kind of understanding of what is natural. He says, men are created with the inclination to do what's natural. It's not natural for people to be enslaved. But again, even in the environment that tries to make this acceptable to you, you still have some resistance to it. And so this, coupled with the fact that the movement was gaining momentum, the movement was gaining momentum in the 50s and the 60s. And so through media, You know, we saw images of people who were resisting.
Are you under arrest?
I am supposedly free. However, it's a shaky freedom because I'm standing on America's territory right here. That's the only thing that's keeping the racist honky tops out there from coming up here because I'm supposed to be on federal ground, whatever that means.
What happens next?
What are you going to do when you leave federal ground?
Well, I'm going to stay here on the steps. I'm going to build a house right here. I don't want 40 acres and a mule. I just want some lumber. I'm gonna build my house.
It's the attorney.
I think a lot of times we've overemphasized the role of the gun in revolutionary struggle. A revolutionary is not only the person who shoots a gun. A revolutionary functions in the struggle on whatever level he happens to be. See, there's something that's going on out at IBM plant. Somebody's out there sabotaging the machine. They don't know who it is. Could be Leroy Double O Soul Buckwheat Johnson Jr. They don't know what's going on, but they know that their machines are breaking down. He's committing a revolutionary act against that company. So wherever you exist, you can exist in a revolutionary fashion if you are committed to revolutionary struggle. See, it's no longer adequate for us to say that we're going to have revolution by any means necessary. You have to begin to define the means that are necessary. You can't say struggle by any means necessary. Because again, you're allowing cats to do their own thing. You allow a cat to say, well, you know, I'm fighting the revolution in this way, Jack. I'm going to get some of the mad money. And that's how I'm fighting the revolution. You must lay down guidelines to revolutionary struggle. And to do that, you must have a revolutionary ideology. People have to understand that in terms of ideology, ideology is shaped as a result of struggle. You don't just sit up one night and come up with the correct ideology. That ideology happens as a result of struggle.
The only politics in this country that's relevant to black people today is the politics of revolution. None other. The only thing that's going to free you is gunpowder. Black powder. Black people become serious about the revolutionary struggle that they are caught up in, whether they recognize it or not, when they begin to go down and knock off people who are oppressing them and begin to render these people impotent, that's when the revolutionary struggle unfolds. Not until we are fighting enemies of the people. They tell you your problem is unemployed. Well, I got a program that can employ every black person in this country overnight.
There are definitions of politics that are relevant to black people. Chairman Mao says that politics is war without bloodshed, and war is an extension of politics. I think black people have to begin to address themselves to the politics of revolution, because we are caught up in revolutionary struggle, whether we want to believe it or whether we want to be or not. So I think, you know, black people have to begin to think in a revolutionary fashion, construct a politically revolutionary platform.
If people became, but we, you know, we as individuals, we as black people hold the key to liberation for people around the world. If people in Vietnam were to become free tomorrow, that would not affect the freedom of people in North Korea. That would not affect the freedom of people in Puerto Rico. See, it's just like an octopus, you cut off its tentacles. You still got tentacles in other places. But if black people see themselves as being a colony in the eye of the monster, we got his brain. You destroy his brain, and you freed Vietnam, you freed, you know, Africa, you freed Rhodesia, you freed Latin America. Because this man is the chief oppressor of mankind. You have to understand that in terms of his wealth is made through the oppression of people around the world. So when we talk about, you know, like, replacing the man, when we talk about an ideology that's limited in scope, that does not talk about destroying the system, system that demands exploitation, then we are talking about replacing the man. Whenever we talk about, you know, like, well, I don't want to destroy, you know, like, this country, then you're talking about replacing. See, I'm as much against a black cat oppressing people around the world as I am a white cat oppressing people around the world. wouldn't make me any difference. I would struggle just as hard against a black cat who oppressed black people, because it would be necessary to oppress some people in this country if you took the seats. If all the white folks in the world would have died and black folks moved in on those in the seats and assumed those positions and business went on as usual, then Vietnam would continue. Rhodesia would still be imprisoned and oppressed. And it would be because of the economic pursuits of this country. The only way that this country can stay wealthy is that it oppresses people. Capitalism demands exploitation in some form of other people. So when we're talking about creating an ideology, we have to talk about the ideology that's free from that type of economic oppression and physical oppression. Because the physical oppression comes as a result of that economic pursuit. So we have to talk about, we have to begin to examine, we can't be immune. We have to examine all ideologies. We just can't be immune because the man says, well, you know, that's communism. Or that's socialism. You shouldn't talk about that. See, I mean, this is the role of the student. You have to begin to articulate that. And I'm not saying that, you know, you take a struggle and bring it over here intact. I'm not saying that. Because you cannot import and export revolution. What I'm saying is begin to examine the concepts of socialism. Understand what the man means when he says that the entire wealth of the world belongs to all people. Which again goes back to what American politics is not based upon. Because American politics is based upon property and land. And a question that has to be raised at this point is, how can you own land? See, if white folks could figure out how to bottle air, they'll do it. To make profit off of it. If they could figure out how to bottle air, they would bottle air. They could figure out how, you know, to measure water in cubics and issue out water every day, they would do that. Because they can make profit off of that. So you have to understand that how in the world can people, you know, talk about owning land, water, and air, because land is just like water and air in that sense.
Aggression, that aggression that's being directed against the Vietnamese people will be turned inwardly against black people in this country. See, America, in terms of where she goes and, you know, like who she controls, a whole sphere of influence is diminishing. America is fighting on about 5 or 6 different fronts right now. Latin America, you know, like Africa, Middle East, and Vietnam, and here domestically. So I think that, you know, given the system and given that it operates off the military-industrial complex, which means that war is profitable, and that, you know, like General Steel, USS Steel, must make steel for tanks to hire people, you know, to give people jobs so they can spend the money to buy other goods. The very fact that the system operates off that principle means that the demand comes back. When the demand is run out of every country, then it will become necessary to wage war in its own country.
It's the whole rule of divide and conquer, when as America, the patriots of America, do not exist as individuals. In reality, white people in this country do not exist as individuals. See, the police have a line talking about, well, we are minority too. That's not true, because they reflect the attitude of the majority of the people in this country. And white people, the white people who are racist, the white people, you know, who are capitalists and who oppress people, they reflect the attitude of the majority in this country. So they do not exist as individuals. So black people have to understand that whole thing of individualism is a luxury that we can ill afford. We cannot afford to be individuals in this country.
Was all of that struggle, all of that pain that you went through, when you look at today, was it worth it?
I think our analysis of struggle has to be as such that it's an ongoing process. With our analysis of struggle is that it began in the 50s, we can reason that it ended in the 60s, which is not the case. When the first African rebelled against being enslaved, he gave an alternative to slavery that has been built upon even until now. What we saw in the 50s and the 60s was movement. And there had been many movements before. There had been the abolitionist movement, the anti-slavery movement, the Niagara movement, the civil rights movement, the free speech movement. You know, there have been movements. Movements that visit struggle. But struggle is an ongoing process. So even today, we are in the midst of struggle. Again, struggle is at a different level than it was at that particular time. What do you see today? And then there are more components, you know, who are aligned to participate in struggle today than there were in the 60s.
You don't see anything analogous to the Panther Party or SNCC today?
Well, those organizations serve their purpose, but there are organizations that will come into being who will be activists, and will be, the activism will be similar and more intense in many instances, because we have to understand that Smith evolved into a point, and then the Panthers became a reality. But the Panthers was not the final organization. After the Panthers, there was the BLA. So again, you know, that whole sense of in involvement and what happened in terms of the BLA is that the population, the base, there was no real base to sustain military action. But what do we see happening today? You see, in terms of, there is a kind of attitude amongst the young people today that is militaristic. You have people, and although the energy is misdirected and many people may put it down in terms of the fratricide that's going on, how else do you train an army in this country?
So you view what you see happening in the urban centers as constructive or positive?
It's not constructive or positive, but again, it is something that always is the prelude to armed struggle in any country. That has always been the case.
We created other people to be spokesmen. People have to get out of the idea that individuals lead movement. The revolutionary is the individual who's on the other side of that camera. These are the people who will make the revolution. They have responsibilities to the revolution and to themselves. And, you know, like, if individuals articulate positions, it's perhaps because they have public forums, not because they know more than anybody else, not because they are more oppressed than anybody else. So black people have to begin to understand the role that they have to play in that revolution is determined by them.
The existence of struggle that we left the 60s years as we continue with an awareness that struggle is not stopped. It didn't begin in the 50s and end in the 70s. If our analysis of struggle is that it began in the 50s and ended in the 70s, then that is a total failure or closure on the part of our struggle that we are involved in. Again, no. The movement sense of struggle, which has always been the struggle. It is that the anti-slavery movement, Love of God's movement, the Black Power movement, Civil Rights movement, they come and they move. But the struggle is continuous until Allah has righted the wrong that has come about. Again, may Allah be pleased with the effort that has been put forth by all the people who struggle here.
So now I really am going to end. Wait. And in ending, I'm going to end in the Swahili saying. It says, Lasima Tusinda Bila Shaka, Bila Shaka, which means, we shall conquer without a doubt. Black power.